For no path, wrote Anicus Manlius Severinus Boethius, is more open to the soul for the formation thereof than through the ears. Therefore, when rhythms and modes have penetrated even to the soul through these organs, it cannot be doubted that they affect the soul with their own character and conform it to themselves. From Wyoming Catholic College, this is the After Dinner Scholar podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Boethius lived from AD 470 to 524 and is known primarily as a Roman scholar, a Christian philosopher, and a statesman. And it's because he was a scholar, philosopher, and statesman that he became interested in music. Professor Christopher Hodkinson assigned Boethius's Fundamentals of Music to Wyoming Catholic College juniors in the course Music in the Western Tradition. I asked Professor Hodkinson to begin by telling us about that course.
So the music course, which is taught at the college in the junior year, is an introduction to music for many of the students. They come from many backgrounds. And so I have all too many goals, but essentially we wish to introduce the students to the great conversation about the arts, just as they're already taking part in that great conversation about other parts of Western civilization. So I'm hoping to introduce students to great music, to teach them something of the theory that underlies it so that they're able to engage with it, not just emotionally, but also rationally, and to show them the conversations that have surrounded music, the thoughts of great philosophers and theologians down the centuries, so that they can, in the end, appreciate what role music should be playing in their own lives.
Now, in the kind of classical education we offer at Wyoming Catholic College, music is part of the mathematical arts, the quadrivium, along with arithmetic, geometry, and astronomy. How is music a mathematical art?
Right. This is something that might not be obvious to many people nowadays. When we think of music, we think of something that we might use to relax to, that we might use as a soundtrack to accompany our lives. We think of it as something quite emotional and not as something that is rational and intellectual, like, for instance, arithmetic. But in fact, the ancients saw music quite differently. They realized long ago, the foundational myth attributes this insight to Pythagoras. They realized that music, in fact, is intimately bound up with number. Now, anyone who's ever tried to learn to play an instrument knows this at some level. We all have to learn to count while we're playing our notes. We learn how to make some notes be twice as long as others and so on. That's a starting point. But Boethius is actually not so much interested in that side of number. He's interested in number as it sounds in harmony. So he's interested in the ways in which the different pitches of notes relate to each other and how that involves number. So in a mathematical sense then, music is the study of the ratios that are involved in the creation of sound. And this is surprising to us, but in fact Boethius has a very solid grasp of the physics of sound as we now understand it. He realizes that, for instance, when a string vibrates, it strikes the air many times every second, and depending upon how thick the string is, how long it is, and similar variables, the number of vibrations, the speed of vibrations can be changed. And so when we hear different pitches, we're simply hearing different frequencies of vibration. And it turns out that these different frequencies, when they sound harmonious to the human ear, are in fact related to ratios which involve very simple proportions of numbers. So for instance, the octave, one of the most recognizable of all intervals, corresponds exactly to the ratio 1 to 2. It's in fact mathematically deeply satisfying to realize that what seems like the arbitrary and irrational appreciation we have for sound in fact has a very profound mathematical basis.
And the same with thirds and fifths and so on?
Exactly so, yes. So a perfect fifth, for instance, would be the 2-to-3 ratio. Boethius didn't like thirds so much, however. He considered thirds to be dissonances because the ratios involved are more complex.
Gosh, what would you think of flat fives?
I think we should be glad that Boethius never heard jazz and didn't tell us about it. So to return to the idea of the quadrivium, if we think about medieval education, I'm particularly thinking about the medieval schools and the early universities, in that context, the quadrivium became an essential part of study. And of course, that's why our students study the arts of the quadrivium today. Music, it's important to say, we don't know a great deal about what was studied in music. Certainly, their idea of studying music was not what we might think. It wasn't learning to play an instrument, how to perform, or even how to compose music. Probably the most important thing that a medieval student would do as part of their studies of the quadrivium would be to read Boethius. And so in reading this text, we're carrying on that grand tradition. The reason they read Boethius is because Boethius lived at a particularly important turning point in history. As the Western Roman Empire was collapsing, the Ostrogoths were in power in Italy, Boethius was one of the last generations of Romans to receive the old Roman classical education. So he was fluent in Greek and trained in all the arts. And De Musica, on music, was a treatise that he wrote probably fairly young before he reached very important roles in the civil service that he later had. It's a treatise in which he brings together all sorts of learning which to later generations who couldn't read Greek or didn't have those manuscripts available to them would not be available. So his most important sources for his treatise on music are two Greek treatises, one by Ptolemy on harmonics, another by a scholar called Nicomachus, which is now lost, and therefore we only know it through Boethius. And so he transmitted to the Latin West in the Middle Ages this ancient tradition of learning, which otherwise they couldn't have had access to. And that's why his treatise in particular became the classic source for musical studies for so many centuries.
Early in the book, Boethius wrote, "Music is connected not only with speculations, but with morality. How is music connected with morality?"
Well, this is an ancient tradition which also goes back all the way to Pythagoras, who lived, by all accounts, a very admirable ascetic lifestyle. Pythagoras used music rather like we might use a spa treatment. If you listened to very fine, pure intervals like octaves and fifths, you could somehow purify the soul, it seems to be the idea. And this tradition of thinking that music and morality were connected then goes on. It's a commonplace in ancient Greek philosophy. Plato writes about it, so does Aristotle. Plato, for instance, in the Republic, considers which kinds of music should be permitted in his ideal city and which ones should be altogether banned. Both Plato and Aristotle think about music in the context of education, about how the youth should be brought up to be good citizens. So Boethius, in passing on this tradition, is not inventing anything new. He gathers together a vast number of ancient examples of this. He speaks, for instance, about a young man who had become excited by the sound of a Phrygian mode and recounts how Pythagoras had sung using a spondaic rhythm, which made him calm. A spondaic rhythm consists of long, slow, regular beats, and is clearly a very calming thing. So it was a whether of course this ever happened, we have no idea. But it was very believable to the ancients that music should have an effect upon our moods, our emotions, and ultimately our moral behavior.
And it does, right?
I think so. I point out to the students that they all take this for granted in their everyday lives. So, for instance, if they wish to put themselves in a certain mood, they play an appropriate music. If they want to work out, they'll play some music that gives them energy to do so. If they want to have a party where everyone's relaxed, they find music that sets the right mood. And of course, they're also worked upon. So for instance, when they go to the store to do their grocery shopping, the music that's being played on the speakers there is calculated to make them walk at the right speed, to keep on buying things. And just like the slightly too cold temperature that makes you want to move on and get out, having bought things at the ideal speed, they want to leave. It's a commonplace which is even commercially important that music does actually change our moods and our behavior.
Boethius talked about three types of music: the cosmic, the human, and then music produced by instruments. What did he mean by these?
This is one of the most surprising things to moderns about Boethius's idea of music. As I've said, when we think of music, we start thinking immediately of instruments and voices and so on. But Boethius thinks of three kinds of music. One of these he calls instrumental music, and that's music you and I think of ordinarily. But the other two, I think he sees as more important. The first kind of music for Boethius is the cosmic music. It's the music that exists in the created world. Later thinkers have sometimes referred to the music of the spheres, so the music embodied in the planetary motions would be one example of cosmic music. It would also be present, for instance, in the relationship between the elements. I've said already music consists in ratios and proportions, so Boethius is theorizing that the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, are present in different proportions in different physical objects in the world. And so it must be the correct ratios that govern exactly which form they take. So those will be some examples of cosmic music. Then the remaining kind of music is, as it were, a middle term between cosmic music and instrumental music. It's human music. That would consist, for instance, in the coordination of the parts of the human body, in the relationship between the physical human body and our spiritual parts, so the way in which our intellectual capacity relates to our physical body, for instance, is a kind of music in his thinking.
How do our students respond to Boethius's ideas about music? How does it add to their appreciation, whether they're listening to it or making it?
I think the great value of Boethius for them, aside from the sheer delight of intellectual discovery as we find out that previous generations had a more expansive view of music than we have, is that it gives them a framework, perhaps not the only possible framework, but it's certainly a very inspiring framework in which to integrate all the different things they know about music. So it could seem that music is a purely subjective art. And Boethius's careful explanation of the mathematical properties of music persuades them that no, music in fact has a rational basis, so that even when we might not be able to explain why music has a certain effect upon us, we know in fact that there is such an explanation, that like so many things in the world, it operates according to laws that are like those of physics. So this gives music a certain objectivity, which allows them to treat it with the same seriousness as other objective disciplines. It also enables them to then see the history of music in a coherent way. So I ask them each fall semester to reflect upon the way in which Boethius's teaching back in the 5th century illuminates the way we can understand music written more than a millennium later, because they can observe the same patterns, the same harmonies present in this music, and see that in a much more elaborate way, perhaps, it embodies the same principles which Boethius held, and which ultimately justify the place of music as part of the life lived well and the life that leads us to virtue, and ultimately, of course, to God, because Boethius's three kinds of music are ultimately part of a Platonic doctrine which would see the low levels, let's say the instrumental music, as embodying the higher levels. And so in some way, when we play instrumental music, we are both forming our human persons to live morally, and we're putting ourselves in tune with the whole universe. So this is the aspiration we would have to a life that's well lived and in harmony with the actual reality of our being.
Neurologist and author Dr. Oliver Sacks noted in his book, Musophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain, quote, "Music uniquely among the arts is both completely abstract and profoundly emotional. It has no power to represent anything particular or external, but it has unique power to express inner states or feelings. Music can pierce the heart directly. It needs no mediation." Close quote. That, it seems to me, is music's great benefit and great danger. It can do great good and it can do great mischief, which makes understanding music, thinking about what we're hearing, an urgent task, not only for our juniors, but for all of us. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.